Racism, inequality, the intervention and a system that puts profits before people. They were just some of the weighty topics discussed at a forum in Adelaide last night, where people from all walks of life gathered to hear the views on some of the most important issues facing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples in Australia. The Wire's Lisa Burns has more.
In late 2010, I went into Woolworths to buy some items such as mouthwash, Listerine. And as I was lining up to pay for my items, I pulled my basic card out. And the people behind me, who were white, cussed under their breath. Now, being on the basic card, it does make you feel less than human. Let me tell you, I wanted to kill myself. That was the lowest point of my life where I actually wanted to end it. I didn't want to live anymore. And I'm pretty sure most of you are feeling the pain right now.
Amelia Cunnith Monks from Utopia in the Northern Territory explaining what it's like living on income management at last night's public forum at Tandanya National Aboriginal Cultural Institute in Adelaide. Indigenous speakers from around the country shared their perspectives and explored some of the most serious problems facing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Australia. Bo Spearham was one of the speakers. He's an activist with the Brisbane Aboriginal Sovereign Embassy in Musgrave Park, which aims to raise awareness of sovereignty and provide a sanctuary for Aboriginal people. He's seen firsthand the positive changes that come when you empower a community.
At the moment we have a food program. 31st of this month, it's been going for a year. We support about 150 Aboriginal families within the greater Brisbane area and outside of, like, with Ipswich and out to Cleveland, almost out to Stradbroke Island, on the north side of Brisbane, on the outskirts. And each week it's growing, you know. Within a few months there'll be, you know, almost 200 families and more, you know, hopefully towards the end of the year. And it's just given, like, an alternative voice, you know, to the people out there. A few of us went on the drop-offs last year. My older brother Peter did. And he, you know, delivered to this family, you know, and the guy goes up to my brother, you know, and shakes his hand, goes, no, thank you, you know. And now we can buy some stuff for Christmas and whatnot. Our kids can have a proper Christmas and whatnot, you know. Like when we go on these food programs, you know, the drop-offs, we actually see what it is that it's actually doing, you know.
You did talk a lot about it in your speech about native nationalism. Can you explain what that is to, you know, some people may not be familiar with that term?
Like when you think of nationalism, you think of, you know, Australia Day, you think of Anzac Day, where they're just pumping out, you know, all this stuff, you know, what it is to be, you know, proud to be Australian. You know, so I guess when we're talking about native nationalism, you know, when we're talking about our nationalism, it's coming from, an Aboriginal perspective.
One of the challenges for native nationalism is the term itself, because a lot of people would probably hear that. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, just a, kind of a scary word. I think people hear activism and they're like, oh, you know, it's a bit scary. Don't want to have anything to do with that.
That's exactly the same, you know, back in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s when there was the rise of black power. They thought it was just some kind of black supremacy or anti-white. You know, we don't want to work with white people, which is, you know, it's a total opposite, you know. You know, the core philosophy within Native nationalism is, you know, to uplift the people and to give that alternative voice, you know, which is not being heard, whether it's seen on TV, read in newspapers or heard on the radios, you know. So it's getting out there and getting another voice out there, you know. Like there's these other campaigns, you know, recognise the recognition within the Constitution. Like, I honestly believe the people that are pushing that don't really actually know how bad, how worse it is, you know, how much of a distraction it is. When you look at some of the recommendations, one is they're going to recognise the English language as the first and foremost language here in Australia, put Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander language as cultural heritage. When you think of that there, in New Zealand, the three main national languages, Māori, English and sign language, they're the three national languages, you know, and like in terms of progression, when you look at other nations around the world, you know, New Zealand had a black prime minister in 1911. You know, in 1901, the constitution, this country was federated and Aboriginal people was classed as fauna and flora, you know, so 10 years after that happened, you know, New Zealand did its first black prime minister. You know, there's indigenous peoples, the Sami peoples, they're indigenous to Norway and a few of those other countries, and they've got their own parliament, and they've had that since, you know, the 1920s. You know, when you look at other First Nations countries around the world, in the Americas, Turtle Island, they've had treaties since, you know, the 1800s. Like, in terms of progression, you know, like, people really got to wake up and just smell the roses or something, you know.